It's Jerry Pippin, and we're, of course, at the Aquarius, and we're at the UFO Congress, and Paul Davids was at the first one. It was in Tucson, huh?
That's right, Tucson, Arizona, if I remember correctly, 1991?
Somewhere along in there. 17 years, I think.
1991 was 4 years after I had a daylight disc UFO sighting, and it was about 3 years before I became executive producer of the movie Roswell, the one with Martin Sheen and Colin Klockwell.
Right. This is Paul David, the noted movie producer and artist.
Thank you.
Are you still doing some paintings?
Boy, am I. Also, a lot of drawings. I'm into caricatures now.
Okay.
I have done a series of caricatures of various UFO researchers that were published in UFO magazine.
Really?
That was about maybe 8 or 10 years ago, but I'm branching out.
So when you did the caricatures and the researchers saw it, did they say, "Hey, what's wrong with you? I don't look that way"? Or did they all compliment it?
Oh, I think most of them felt I'd captured something of their essence, and a caricature I once did of Paula Harris appears on her website and in her books, and people love them.
Well, good. Well, you're a talented fellow. They ought to. We've talked about that Roswell, and we've talked to you in Roswell, and you've got a new project I think is coming out pretty soon.
Yes, I do. One I'm very proud of, Jerry.
Yeah, this seemed to be... I know a little bit about it. But it seems like it was a labor of love. You went to India, right?
That's right. I went to India with Edward T. Martin and had a crew mainly Hindu and Syrian Christian, and we had a Muslim involved. And, of course, Ed was the Texan. And we traipsed across 4,000 miles of India from up in the Himalayas down to the Madurai Temple in the south, in search of what we could further learn about the legends, myths, and evidence that Jesus of Nazareth was, for part of his historical existence, in India.
Now, what did we end up calling this feature?
It's called Jesus in India.
So the name hasn't changed since the last time I heard about it.
That's right. Good. And it will be released this year. I'm very excited to say we expect to be... to have a special screening at a major film festival in the late spring. And we will be in a few theaters. That may expand, depending upon the initial reception. But above all, we will be on a major network. I'm expecting the late summer to early fall.
Well, I understand some of these negotiations are still going on. And
we're wrapping them up now, though. It's really taken form, and we will have worldwide distribution on television. So this is very, very encouraging.
When we talk about this feature, it's a little controversial, too.
The subject is controversial, but it's been handled in a way with greatest respect for all beliefs and all religions. And
as everyone, you mentioned, you had a
everyone gets their say.
Yeah, you got a varied camera crew and a location producer and the whole thing.
I think the key thing is, I grew up near Washington, D.C., and my father was a Jewish professor at Catholic University, Georgetown University. I grew up with the greatest respect for Catholicism. And in that view, I sought out two terrific professors of religion at Georgetown who are in this film. I had went to the Vatican, and Monsignor Corrado Balducci, an apostolic nuncio, participated in this film. Michael Hesseman, who is a Vatican-accredited journalist, contributes to this. But we also have in the film the Pope of Hinduism, the Shankaracharya of Hinduism, who resides near the Jagannath Temple, a 2,500-year-old temple in Puri, India, in eastern India, making his first public statement about Jesus in India. He has almost never given interviews. He gave us an absolutely historic interview in Hindi, asserting that Jesus was in India, that he was at the Jagannath Temple. Of course, Monsignor Balducci rather vociferously rejects this and contradicts it. So, in addition to the Dalai Lama joining the fray and a noted rabbi we run the gamut of opinion to try to get at this matter.
Actually, find a crypt or a tomb or a grave that might have been Jesus in India or something like that?
The controversy about the grave or the tomb in Srinagar is another aspect of this puzzling question, which has two parts to it. The first part is that we know that there are what are so-called missing years, or as Catholics have referred to it, hidden years of Jesus from age 12 to approximately age 30 that are covered only in one sentence in the New Testament. So historically, there's no firm answer to where Jesus was for those 18 years or how he suddenly emerged. That's the one part of the life that's being investigated. Did he, during that time, join a camel caravan along the Silk Route, return to India, go to India? Were the three wise men from India? Were they from Persia? Does that enter into the mystery? So we have a lot of questions about that period. The other aspect of this is that there are some who have entertained the notion that Jesus had a life after the crucifixion.
That's what I was getting at.
Yeah. The Muslims, of course, and we're talking about, billions of people worldwide don't accept that Jesus died on the cross. Christians, of course, insist on it. Jews have no opinion. But for those who feel that, yes, he was seen by all those apostles afterwards, yes, that absolutely did happen, but they feel that it happened because the Romans didn't quite finish the job, not because of miraculous resurrection. Some of those people feel that Jesus went back to India. Now, the crux of this that makes it so interesting is that there is a tomb of Mother Mary in Pakistan, Murray, Pakistan, named after Mary. It's a misspelling, Murray, M-U-R-R-E-E. There's a grave there that the locals have venerated for hundreds of years as the tomb of Mary. The legend is that she returned to Jesus and died along the route, and that he lived on in Kashmir, a Jewish enclave at that time, and that there's a tomb for him in Srinagar. We went to that tomb, and it was probably the most dangerous thing I ever did in my life because there was war around us. An American seen to be there. My life would have been in danger. Ed Martin's life would have been in danger. We actually sent our Hindu crew into the Muslim area to film at that tomb while we stayed back hidden in a nearby houseboat on Dal Lake. And we got extraordinary footage and a most remarkable encounter between our film crew and the Muslims who live near that tomb, mm-hmm. as we questioned and investigated who is the revered prophet that whose remains are at the Rose Bowl. And, while the questions are controversial, nothing in my film purports to give any answers, any final answers, and I try not to take a position. I think there's a right to answer there's a right to raise the questions and look at what people are saying about it. It's an interesting topic, but I can't presuppose to know. And I think one of the strong points of the film is that it doesn't take a position as to what the answer is, but leaves that to the audience to sort out for themselves.
Now, the name of the film again is?
It's Jesus in India. And Jerry, one other thing I wanted to say is that in the film world, it's often said that the true mark of a really mm-hmm. a strong film is as much as the immediate reaction to the film itself while you're watching it, it's the conversation that happens afterwards at Starbucks or whatever.
Yes.
How much discussion does it generate, and how long does that argument go on for? And this film promises one of the most... One of the longest coffee cups anybody has ever tried to swallow.
I hadn't thought about that, but that would be an important thing to really build a movie up if they talk about it after it's over.
Yeah.
Instead of, hey, that was a great movie.
Look, make us think. How many of the projects out there today are designed to provoke people into thinking and discussion as opposed to giving them a thrill experience? I favor the movie that challenges us. I love to film like What the Bleep Do We Know?
Yeah.
And Inconvenient Truth. So there, and Michael Moore's documentaries always provoke us.
Yes.
Agree with them or loathe him.
Right.
He's a controversial figure who brings up controversial subjects. So it's healthy.
Yes, it is. I agree with you on that. When are you going to do something in the UFO genre again?
Well, I'll say that...
I mean, you're still interested in this. You go to every conference. I see you around everywhere.
I do. I have attended many of the UFO conferences and keep attending every year to be briefed on what the latest claims and information are. One of my projects is based on Fate magazine. Phyllis Galdi is the publisher out of Minneapolis. Yes. Fate has been around since 1948 as True Reports of the Strange and Unknown. There's a library of stories there of, I would say, around 20,000 stories and 700 issues. And through the relationship of my company, Yellow Hat Productions... You always see me wearing a yellow hat, don't you, Terry?
Yes.
Through Yellow Hat Productions' relationship
with... That's you don't have your hat on. I knew there was something different.
It'll
here,
be here for when I introduce the movies later today.
Okay.
But Phyllis Galdi, publisher of Fate, has entered into an agreement with Yellow Hat, and we have an agreement with Rigel Entertainment and Fox Durant out of Los Angeles, and we are intending to put Fate television out
and,
there.
And it'll be... Probably what I like it. It'd be, for lack of a better comparison, maybe like Untold Mysteries, documentary style.
That's a show that I like very much. No, I wouldn't say it's top secret. We, you know, there's extraordinary stories in Fate.
Mm-hmm.
Take them or leave them, for whether they're real or not. The point is they're in Fate magazine because somebody claimed it really happened.
Right.
And that makes it interesting. As long as you've vetted the people, as Fate magazine does, and
I think it's one heck of a concept.
The third project related to our mutual interest, Jerry, is a project I've had in the works with Richard C. Hoagland for almost a decade. Hoagland, whose work is very well known,
yes,
particularly to listeners of Coast to Coast AM, has the theories about ancient structures on the moon and on Mars. And he recently had a New York Times bestseller called Dark Mission.
Yes.
A book I recommend. So we have a screenplay that deals with his work and research in a fictionalized, that is a kind of a Hollywood adventure.
Yeah.
We've been close to having the deal together on that a couple of times, once with RKO. Hasn't quite worked out yet, but boy, we haven't given up. We'll get it up there on the screen.
No, it sounds like quite a project. It ought to fly with somebody.
Thank you.
Yeah, it really should. Now, tonight you come here every night for the movies. I've seen you in here.
You know, last year at the International UFO Congress here in Laughlin, my film, The Sci-Fi Boys, walked off with three of the EB Awards, and I'm proud to say after that, it won the Saturn Award in Hollywood for Best DVD of 2006. Then it won the international-based, fan-based Rondo Award for Best Genre Film of 2006. Got a lot of acclaim. And Bob Brown and Nicole Brown, yep, Irvine of the UFO Congress asked me, would I be the chairman of the film festival for this year? I accepted. I saw all the submissions. I helped sort them out and put together the schedule. And I'm here to introduce all of these films, and I think we've got a remarkable selection, and that the filmmakers whose works we've chosen really deserve to get recognition for their passionate work.
And everybody's thankful you're here, and I understand you put together quite a program. Everybody I've run across is pretty pleased.
It's really strong. We've got five nights of films, 3 hours a night, and it ranges from the shorts to the features, documentary in nature, speculative in nature, all of it very, very provocative, and those are the films I like.
Filmmakers out there, do they contact the UFO Congress if they want to get something entered?
Yes, you know, it's all over the internet now. There was a publicist aboard who got pictures of our EB Award, this wonderful statuette that sort of mimics the Oscar, you know, but
yes,
it's silver instead of bronze or gold, and it's an alien upright, holding a 35-millimeter movie camera.
Yeah, right.
So there was There was a Hollywood movie called Explorers about the aliens up there in orbit watching all of our best movies and television shows. And, maybe it's true, Jerry. It
could be. Paul Davids, it's always good to have you on.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, thank you very much.